This video is brought to you thanks to the support of my Patreons. If you'd like to support this channel or get access to some of the perks, I'll put a link in the description box. Okay, I didn't want to do this, but we're gonna have to talk about Katy Perry. We thought she had learned the lesson after Women's World, but no, she didn't. She went to space and came back with some deep reflections on the meaning of life.
You are officially an astronaut.
Thank you so much.
How do you feel?
I feel super connected to love.
I don't know what's going on lately with 2010s celebrity icons. Katy Perry goes into Jeff Bezos' spaceship. Kim Kardashian does ads for Tesla. And then Gwen Stefani partners with a religious app created by Peter Thiel.
I'd love to invite you to join me in praying every day leading up to Easter on the Hallow app.
Today I'm going to focus on Katy Perry, but what I'm going to say in this video also applies to people like Gwen Stefani, to Kim Kardashian. And ultimately, it's not about them, but more about what they represent. So here we go. Katy Perry's recent trip to space, followed by her reflections on reconnecting with Mother Earth, marks a significant moment in the evolution of feminism. As one of the most famous pop icons of the 21st century, Perry has long been associated with messages of empowerment, choice, and individual freedom. But her recent trip to space and return to Mother Earth is a reminder that pop feminism has increasingly lost touch with the real, messy struggles that many women face, to the point where no one's get fooled anymore. It's over now. People are starting to really hate Katy Perry, but it doesn't have to be about her, you know. Katy Perry represents pop feminism, a branch of liberal feminism. It became especially clear when the artist released her last album, specifically the song Woman's World. We'll get back to it in a bit, but first I want to make it clear that it's not because liberal feminism is dying that feminism is dying. Quite the contrary. So this video isn't about saying that feminism equals bad. It's about redefining what feminism is and give a voice to feminists who've been sidelined for way too long. Now it's time to move on. So pop feminism can be understood as a cultural offshoot, or even the glitter-covered, Instagram-ready branch of liberal feminism. While liberal feminism emphasizes individual rights, legal equality, and the empowerment of women within existing political and economic systems, pop feminism takes these ideas and packages them in a way that is highly consumable and appealing within mainstream media. It often focuses on personal empowerment, confidence, and girl boss energy, translating feminist ideals into catchy slogans, fashion trends, or chart-topping music. Think of Beyoncé, for example, standing in front of giant illuminated letters spelling feminist during her 2014 VMAs performance, or Gwen Stefani's early 2000s anthem like Hollaback Girl, which shows a type of femininity that is cool, fun, a bit punk. And then when it comes to Katy Perry, we can think about songs like Firework or Raw, which makes you feel good, makes you feel strong. I remember my teenage self really getting in the mood, singing Raw to get over a breakup that only really happened in my head. While these messages are empowering in a personal sense, they often overlook the more systemic problems that so many women face today, like poverty, discrimination, and violence. Now, just to situate that time-wise, we had the beginning of third-wave feminism in the early, middle 1990s, expanding onto the 2000s, and even a little bit in the 2010s before the Me Too movement kind of kicked the fourth wave. There are a lot of debates around those waves, and to be honest with you, it's hard to explain feminism as a series of waves, but that's another conversation. What I think is important to know here is that pop feminism is kind of like the cultural representation of third wave feminism, which started in the early mid 1990s, so deep into neoliberalism. With every new wave of feminism, there's also a series of new essays that kind of defined the decade. With second wave feminism, you had the feminine mystique, and with third wave feminism, we can say that The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf was very influential. It was termed one of the seventh most important book of the 20th century. This book is a great example of the many contradictions of liberal feminism. In it, Wolf critiques the unrealistic beauty standards that have been forced on women for decades. She points out that these standards are part of a larger system designed to distract women from bigger issues like their roles in the workforce or their rights in society. However, while Wolf's work highlights an important issue, it doesn't tackle the bigger picture, the economic system that make gender inequality so persistent. This diversion from the root causes of women's struggle has led us to believe that we now live in a sort of post-feminist era. Feminism is not relevant anymore. It's a woman's world now, and you're living in it. One of the defining features of post-feminism is the coexistence of feminist and anti-feminist ideas within the same cultural moment. Women are encouraged to embrace fashion, beauty, sexuality, and domesticity not as imposed norms, but as empowering personal choices. A woman who wears high heels, undergoes cosmetic procedures, or prioritizes her appearance is not necessarily seen as conforming to patriarchal standards, but rather as exercising her autonomy. This shift is based on the logic that choice is itself inherently feminist, regardless of what feminists might have said in the past. Now I want to clarify that I'm not challenging a woman's autonomy to make free choices, even if these choices aren't emancipatory. What I'm challenging is the notion that choice is itself feminist. It is not. It doesn't have to be feminist to be valid. You're in charge of your own life. So what happened a few days ago with the space trip is a good example of post-feminism. Katy Perry brought the divine feminine energy to space, but she also brought a daisy, symbol of strength and resilience. All that divine femininity and empowerment was contained in the spaceship of Jeff Bezos' company Blue Origin. It's the ultimate representation of late-stage capitalism. We knew what to expect, though. Katy Perry served us a masterclass of post-feminism in her music video Woman's World, released in 2024. In the video, you see her working like a man, peeing like a man, drinking whiskey by women, charging her machine of a body with gas, or flying on a helicopter. But she also shows her divine feminine, her hot body, supplements. I don't know what those gummies are, I'm too prude for this. And then she shows herself using skincare products and makeup with Trisha. She's a girl's girl, you see. Katy Perry fully embraces the contradiction of post-feminism through the merger of girl-boss feminism with divine femininity. But the backlash the album received is proof that post-feminism isn't culturally relevant anymore. Liberal feminism, in the form of pop feminism or post-feminism, is showing signs of its weaknesses. We talked a lot about culture, but even politically speaking, many liberal feminist politicians have been very disappointing. I'm thinking about former and current ministers of gender equality in France, Marlène Schiappa and Aurore Berger, who communicate a lot. They love to communicate, they communicate very well, but they don't do a lot of concrete stuff, you know? I'm also thinking about Kamala Harris or Ursula von der Leyen in action in the face of all the killings inflicted upon Palestinian women and kids. And finally, I'm thinking about Annalena Baerbock, the German Minister of Foreign Affairs and former Green Party member who created this idea of feminist diplomacy, a form of diplomacy aware of gender-specific risks. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? Well, that sounds interesting until you realize that under this label of feminist diplomacy, Baerbock explained that it is okay to bombard civilian areas because terrorists take advantage of them. Go girls, I guess. The level of absurdity is so high that we cannot turn a blind eye anymore. We can't let those people define what feminism is for us. I want to live in a world where if Katy Perry, Hillary Clinton, or Annalena Baerbock says that they are feminists, we collectively laugh at them. Now, if you're annoyed by all of this, that means that you also want to change our understanding of feminism. So what do we do now? It's okay to complain about celebrities, but we need to go beyond that, right? So how can we attach new meanings to feminism? Lately, I've been reading this book. It's in French, but basically it tells the story of Kollontai's fight to incorporate feminism into 20th century socialist movements. The authors explain that the fight between socialist feminists and liberal feminists is not new. In fact, the struggle has intensified as capitalism and then neoliberalism created a fertile ground for the development of liberal feminism. The ideas that Kollontai developed throughout the 20th century have been buried for so long. But in recent years, her ideas have re-emerged. This book is proof of that. It was published last year. And it's not just about Kollontai. A new generation of feminist scholars are redefining what we mean when we say feminism. For too long, people have associated feminism with words like pop culture, post-feminism, liberal feminism. All those forms of feminism emphasize that women can be like men. They can take part in the capitalist economy and challenge men's dominance. In other words, more and more women have given up reproductive roles, you know, having children, caring for the family, to occupy more productive roles, aka work for the capitalist economy. Now, obviously, women occupy both reproductive and productive roles, but there is a progressive shift away from reproduction to production. So from domesticity to make your own money, girl. This, social feminists argue, is a diversion from the real problem, which is workers' exploitation. Sure, more and more women have achieved financial independence by giving away some of their reproductive labor, but that reproductive labor hasn't disappeared. It's gone somewhere else. It's been outsourced to working-class women, often marginalized women in urban areas and working-class white women in the countryside. You see, socialist feminists argue that we cannot be free until everyone is free. For them, that means removing the stigma that liberal feminism has put on care work or domestic work, also called reproductive labor. To do that, they came up with a theory, social reproduction theory. Social reproduction theory shifts the focus of feminism from individual empowerment to the recognition of unpaid labor, particularly the care work that women have historically done, whether it's raising children, taking care of the elderly, or managing their home. This labor is often invisible and undervalued, but it is absolutely essential to the functioning of the capitalist economy. Now here's the twist. Social reproduction theory doesn't limit itself to women's reproductive labor. That would be a bit reductive, and you know, we don't want to encourage a return to domesticity or reduce women to domesticity. Instead, socialist feminists demand that we broaden our definition of what reproductive work means and share it more equally across society. In other words, reproductive work isn't just about making babies, taking care of the home, and cooking nice meals. It's also ensuring access to clean water, decent housing, leisure activities. In that case, reproduction encompasses all the things that ensure that we have a functioning generation of individuals ready to fulfill their role in society, whether it's care work, construction work, teaching, researching, etc. This approach of reproductive work is much more inclusive. You know, anyone can get involved and everyone can get advantage of it. Our problem today is that our neoliberal governments don't really care about reproductive work. They expect people to do that work privately. You know, they expect families to take on more and more of the cost of raising children. They expect us to get all geared up with sleep apps, a water filter, and expensive self-care rituals. All our governments care about is economic growth ensured by productive work. They are obsessed with productive work. They don't really care about what people have to do outside of work as long as they perform well at work and make babies and reproduce the next generation of disciplined workers. Social reproduction theory, on the other hand, establishes reproductive labor as the bedrock of society. It believes that having a society that cares for itself is a necessity, and it shows that we all have a role to play in it. It starts with the recognition of our economy's dependence on women's care work and calls for a complete reorganization of society around this very notion of care. So yeah, this is my definition of what feminism is, and it is my goal to make it as culturally relevant as liberal feminism was for such a long time. But to do so, I'm gonna need your help. If you agree that it is time to change the definition of what feminism is, you can share this new definition in the conversations you have with friends, colleagues, family. You can talk about this in the work you do, in the things you write, in the art that you create. You know, it requires a lot of people to trigger a cultural change of that size, but I believe we can do it. Because baby, you're a... Thank you for watching. I hope you enjoyed it. As per usual, I would like to thank my patrons for their support, and a special thank to top-tier patrons Hongjing Wang, Paul-Louis Agenot, George Kweme, Wolf Kratz, Patrick Button, Jeff Lee, Yilan, Tayab Matin, Nick, Brandon, James, Ujwal, Pablo, Patrick, Boris, Ria, Corrigi, Tristan, Christopher, Yon, Donage, Alex, Manuel, Christopher France, and Perry. And thank you to the other ones who prefer to stay anonymous. Okay, that's it for me. I'll see you very soon. Salut!